So today, like lo in the last week, I talked about dealing with difficulty through, or not last week, maybe it was 2 weeks ago, dealing with difficulty through the method of RAIN, its acronym, recognize, accept, investigate, and depending on who you listen to, nurture or non-identify. And today I want to look at some of the those difficulties that we can actually experience. So if you feel discouraged after this talk, then you can listen to the one from last time to see how you can work with all the difficulty. So the difficulties, the classic difficulties that we might encounter in our meditation, are the five hindrances. And I want to actually do a deep dive into the five hindrances, starting today with just kind of an introduction and then the first one, and then see how it goes from there, how much time I spend on each. So the hindrances are the five R: sensual desire, ill will, sloth, and torpor. So sensual desire is first, and then second is ill will, and then sloth and torpor are the third together, and then the fourth together are less restlessness and worry, and then the fifth is doubt. And so the hindrances, the Pali word, so the Pali is the language which some of the Buddhist scriptures were written down in. So the Pali word for the hindrances is Nivarana, and according to Gil Fronsdal, that this term means covering. So states of mind that cover something. And then what do you think? What do they cover? They cover a clear mind and the ability to be mindful, to be wise and concentrated. And Buddha, the Buddha mentions in the Anguttara Nikaya, one of the books, teachings, each of the hindrances are an obstruction, a hindrance, an encumbrance of the mind, a state that weakens wisdom. That's the Buddha's description of the hindrances. And then he continues, without having abandoned these five obstructions, hindrances, encumbrances of the mind, states that weaken wisdom, it is impossible that a practitioner with his powerless and feeble wisdom might know his own good, the good of others, or the good of both, or realize a superhuman distinction in knowledge and vision worthy of the noble ones. And then he mentions, suppose a river were flowing down a mountain, traveling a long distance with a swift current carrying along much flotsam. Then on both of its banks, a man would open irrigation channels. In such a case, the current in the middle of the river would be dispersed, spread out, and divided so that the river would no longer travel a long distance with a swift current, carrying along much flotsam. And so the hindrances kind of prevent us from this unobstructed flowing, kind of disperse our energy in a way, kind of like you have like a pipe and you have all these holes in it, that, you know, water doesn't flow very well through it, of course. And yeah, to be realistic right away of our expectations, hindrances will be part of our practice, no matter, you know, what, until we're basically awakened. So it's not a personal failure if they show up. It's just going to be part of what we're doing. Something to work with, something we can investigate and look at, learn from. And so when they show up, we can see it actually as a chance to grow and to learn and to gain wisdom. And so in a way, these words, this word of hindrances might not be like super helpful. Maybe we can look at them as opportunities for our practice, mind states that might help us gain wisdom. It's like sometimes this simile is being used of the lotus flower rooted in the mud. The hindrances are our mud from which our lotus flower can grow. And the Buddha pointed out 5 areas that can be useful when we explore this working with the hindrances. So the first is the hindrance itself, recognizing the body and the mind aspects. What does it feel like in the body? What does it feel like in the mind? How does it actually manifest itself, this hindrance? So that's the first, the hindrance itself. Then the second area is its absence. What does it feel like if it's not there? But it's not present, and we can even delight in the non-arising or the not being present of the hindrance. And then the third is to look at how it arose, what kind of causes and conditions lead for a certain hindrance to arise. Then the fourth one is, how is it removed? It's really important to have certain strategies and tools to work with the hindrances, like this RAIN acronym that I was talking about last time, for example, M1. And then how do we prevent it from arising again? So those are the 5 areas. The hindrance itself, the absence, how it arose, how it's removed, and how to prevent it from arising again. And so at the end of the talk, I want to come back to that. With regard to this first hindrance that I'll talk about tonight, which is sensual desire, kamachanda. And this kamachanda is the Pali word. According to Gill again, it means chanda means simply means chanda simply means desire. And no worries. Kama is not kama in the sense of karma, it's kamas, K-A-M-A, so not double M or not karma with an R. Kama and karma are the same. Karma is Sanskrit and kama is Pali, but here it says kama with one M. And it's a strong word, according to Gill, referring to sense pleasure or sensual passion and also sexual lust. So it's not only sexual, it's also all the other senses, kind of the desire for ice cream, for example. And so according to Gill, together, kama chanda refers to the compulsive preoccupation with sensual pleasure and comfort. And so it's any desire that might arise at the 5 sense doors of body, the touch of the body, the skin, inner landscape of the body, hearing, seeing, tasting, and smelling. And so desire itself is a mental phenomena though, but there can be desire around these 5 sense doors. And sometimes, at least in my own practice, I can recognize that there is a certain desire for mental phenomena too. Desire for peace or desire for thinking, even, like, often we want to get rid of our thinking, but we might be able to recognize that sometimes we actually want to think. So there's something interesting going on, for example, some plan we want to think out. Sometimes that can happen. And so for each hindrance, the Buddha has this simile of a bowl of water that obstructs the clear seeing. So there's I'll just read this, the quote. It's from the Samyutta Nikaya. Suppose there's a bowl of water mixed with lac, turmeric, blue dye, or crimson dye. If a man with good sight were to examine his own facial reflection in it, he would neither know nor see it as it really is. So too, when one dwells with a mind obsessed by sensual lust. End quote. So this dye in the water makes that we can't see the reflection anymore. And so that can be a powerful simile or metaphor for ourselves, like when sense desire, when sensual desire is present, there's this kind of dye in the mind. It's not a clear seeing anymore. It's like looking through this filter. Like our mind is colored with this dye. So this is about this the sense desires. This first hindrance is about wanting, desiring things that are not present right now. That is one aspect of it. Like maybe wanting ice cream right now, or wanting to go to sleep. You know, whatever wanting or desire we might have. It can also be something that is already present, but we want it to stay. Like a certain feeling of relaxation, or maybe feeling the warmth in our body, not wanting to get cold, or all sorts of little things like that. And the thing is that that's kind of pointless, right? Either to want something that's not here or to want something to stay, because it's not really in our control usually. Sometimes it is, you know, we could maybe regulate our temperature with the AC or the heat or a blanket or a fan, or that kind of thing. But to a certain extent, it's not under our control, and things change all the time. There's this truth of impermanence, Nietzsche in Pali. Impermanence, like we'll be getting cold and warm, cold and warm, cold and warm. It's just the nature of the body. And then when this pleasantness changes, when this pleasantness of the warm body feeling cold changes, then the dukkha arises, so the suffering or the unsatisfactoriness. Then you're like, oh yeah, now there's another want arising because there's dukkha, because there's something unpleasant, something else is being wanted now. So this is very ingrained in our human being. This is just happening all the time, this wanting and pushing away, wanting and pushing away, in small and big ways. Just even like a simple, tiny little wanting to move the body just a little bit, or blinking with the eyes, or just wanting a just tiny bit more deeper breath, or, you know, this can be so small. It can also be really big, like wanting to move, or wanting to get a promotion, or wanting climate change to be fixed, or, you know, all these things. And so a very interesting thing to do is to investigate the wanting mind, the desiring mind, and see if this wanting and desiring, if that is something that's pleasant or unpleasant for you, the wanting itself. So not the thing that you want, but the wanting itself. Is that pleasant or unpleasant? And you can maybe see if your desire, if your want is not being fulfilled. How does it feel? Then you can feel the contraction, right? The unpleasantness of it. But if it is fulfilled, we don't really notice this unpleasantness, this contraction that wanting gives, that desire gives. So it's easier to see that this, the desiring mind, that is actually unpleasant, it's easier to see if we don't get what we want. We sometimes might even be able to see this little toddler in ourselves, like getting all worked up as a little tantrum. Like, oh, I wanted the ice cream and now the ice cream shop is closed. We all have this little toddler in ourselves, probably. You can probably recognize that. And so we can investigate for ourselves. What does this desire, what does this wanting and craving actually look like, actually feel like? Is it something that we keep on wanting to do? There's another want. And one way we could try this out, or try out further this investigation, is to start not giving into these simple small wants, these simple small desires. Like the desire for a cookie, maybe we can try, oh, what if I don't take it, what happens? And then see if there's this little mini tantrum going on in the mind. Oh, I wanted a cookie and now I'm not getting it. And it really can't do any harm to taking, right? So we could try that. And when we meditate, we can try it too. Like not shift the posture for a little bit. Not to get into too much harm or hurt for ourselves, but just to try it out for just a little bit, a few moments. What happens if we don't itch or don't shift the posture? when we're doing walking meditation, when we don't look up at whatever is going on around us. This little thing in the corner of our eye that moves. Oh, it's a squirrel. You know, maybe we didn't need to know. And so it is important to make a distinction between this craving, wanting, desiring mind, and just enjoying things. Because there's nothing wrong with enjoying things. Because when we enjoy whatever's happening, it doesn't necessarily mean that there's a lot of desire going on or a lot of wanting. I mean, it's kind of common that when something pleasant is happening, that we start desiring for more or desiring for it to last longer. But sometimes it's just simple enjoyment, and we can just enjoy, and we can see if there's an added layer or not, and we don't have to like beat ourselves up for any added layers. That's just the way it is. We don't have to stop enjoying. And that also an important side note here is that there also exist wholesome desires. Wholesome, that's called chanda, wholesome chanda. The desire to awaken, for example, is wholesome. The desire for wholesomeness is wholesome. The desire to practice, the desire to cultivate the path, desire to abandon unwholesomeness. So all these point to that this cluster of wholesomeness is desiring that is wholesome. That's okay. There's nothing wrong with that. So now I want to go into working with desire and wanting. And like I said before, there are these five areas that the Buddha recommends to explore when we work with an hindrance, which is the hindrance itself. So the recognition of it in our bodies and minds, like, what does it actually feel like to desire something? Is there maybe this forward-leaning kind of energy in our body and in our mind? This kind of this grasping, this going out kind of energy. Maybe there are certain body experiences that go with it for you, like a certain feeling in the chest or in the belly, or you know, you could feel into your body, like, what does it feel like? What kind of thoughts circle around the desire? Kind of this, maybe these toddler thoughts of like, oh, but I can have this, right? There's nothing wrong with it, or that kind of thing. So investigating the hindrance itself. And we can also start paying attention to when it's absent. That's the second way of working with it. Because that's kind of a real delight. It can be a real source of delight, like, ah, there's no craving present right now. Or maybe there's ill will, or maybe there's doubt present, but there's no craving or desire. Great, it's awesome. Really be happy with that. We can look at how it arose. For example, what causes and conditions lead to certain hindrances? Like, you might have a hindrance that comes up more often than other hindrances. And you can look at what is this specific hindrance? Why is this arising? Like, this desire. For example, a way that it might arise is that we can look at the sense doors that, like I was alluding to in the meditation, like the sound for, now it's crickets, this cicadas have I've gone to sleep, I think. We can like feel like, oh, there's desire, there's this sound, and then there's desire for more of this sound. Or there's this thought, and then there's desire for more of this thought. So And sometimes it's like seeing things. For example, a little bit ago, I was on vacation with some family members, and they left all these snacks out on the counter. And I usually hardly ever eat any snacks. I just have my meals and then nothing in between. But all these snacks on the counter, every time I walked by the counter, there were these snacks. I'm like, this desire for snacks. And I like, it felt like I had to like battle myself every time I walked by this counter. Well, at home, I don't have any snacks, and there's no desire coming up for any snacks. So really clearly, the presence of the snacks was one of the conditions helping the desire to arise. So it can be as simple as that. Just the presence of something might make us desire something, or the absence of something might desire us to for it to be there. So we can look at it at that level. And also, even like certain thoughts or certain emotions or feelings can evoke certain desires. You know, thinking about someone you find attractive might cause this desire, and then more and more coming up. Well, if you can stop yourself at the moment that the desire or that the thought arises, and don't go on this train of events of going on and on, then you might not be so caught up in this lust or desire. And then when desire is present, there's always some ignorance present, some delusion. And because that's just part of the nature of any of the hindrances, that there is some delusion present, some ignorance. And that means that we don't see clearly, like with the dye in the bowl. So, and what we don't see clearly is that desire does not lead to our long-term welfare and happiness. And that the thing that we're desiring is also not leading us to any long-term welfare and happiness. So at best, it might give us a temporary happy feeling, right? If we get a new phone, we feel like happy for a moment, and then that fades away again, right? Everything is bound to change. So also, this will change, this thing will change. This phone will be not so new anymore, you know, in a few weeks or years. And so we can look at this deeper level of not seeing clearly, like, why do you think this is gonna make you happy? Is it actually gonna make you happy? And we can look at is this hindrance of desire, how can we remove it? We will all kind of experience desire, right? So it's not that we're, now that you heard it talk about desire, you're never gonna have any desire anymore. So you will all experience it. It will just happen. So it's important to look at, like, how can we look at how to remove it? And the first simple tip is to just be mindful. Be mindful of the hindrance. Use that investigation that I was just talking about. Recognizing, it has arisen, of course. and just the seeing of it can sometimes help it disband. It just can go away by just seeing it. That's really nice if that happens. But if not, then one of the standard ways that the Buddha talks about it is to look at non-attractiveness or repulsiveness. So for example, he mainly talks about being attracted to another person. And then we can look at focusing on the unattractive parts of the body, like the body hairs or the nails or the pus or the blood or the urine or other parts of the body that you might not find attractive. Reflecting on these parts of the body of that person can be helpful. Or sometimes reflect on that they, when they're like a rotting corpse, is one of the ways to look at it, or the little extreme. But So that's one way that the Buddha advises. And another way is to look at the harm that our desire might cause. Like when I was desiring those snacks, they might not be so healthy, right? They might not be so good for my health. So reflecting on, okay, maybe I shouldn't take this snack now because it's not so healthy. And there are many desires that actually can have a harmful effect. If we desire a person that is not our partner or that is in relationship with someone else, that might be harmful, right? If we actually would act on that. So we can reflect on that. Okay, this is actually harmful. Let's, you know, kind of talk to ourselves like that, reflect on that.
There's another way of putting that is one honey is sufficient.
Mm-hmm. One honey is sufficient if you're in a committed monogamous relationship. Maybe you're in an open relationship, then it's fine, of course. Depends on your commitment or what you have agreed on with your partner.
Loophole. What was the question?
It's a loophole. I'm talking about a loophole in the process here. Anyways, we can also try to prevent desire from arising. And then we get back to this guarding of the sense doors that I was talking about in the meditation, which can mean the way that we use it in the meditation. So we actually try to guard the sense doors at the moment that a sense impression comes in, we're mindful of it, and we try not to go any further than that. So the sound comes in and we know that there's an inclination to want more of this sound or to push it away. And we say, okay, stop. We stop ourselves in our tracks. Sometimes this works. This doesn't always work, of course. We just sometimes just go there anyways. But that's one way that sometimes works, which is part of guarding the sense doors. Another way of guarding the sense doors is to just not engage, like I was saying, with don't look at the snacks. Don't look at the snacks. Or don't buy the snacks. Or don't turn on the television if you know that you're going to be stuck in front of the television for the next few hours if you watch television.
Custody of the senses.
Custody of the senses. Yeah. So that's kind of a lot around desire and some of the ways to work with it. And I can also recommend the brain process that I talked about last time. And so this is the first of the five hindrances, and we looked at what it is, and about desiring things, people, or states of mind, or certain sensations in the body that might not be present or that might be present that we want to stay. And we talked about being okay with enjoying things, about wholesome desires, and about investigating desires and working with desires as well. And I want to end with a quote from Barbara O'Brien, author. We don't have to run screaming from all of life's pleasures. As practice matures, we learn to distinguish between the wholesome and the unwholesome, what supports our practice and what hinders it. This in itself is practice.